all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Thank you, Don Rue, and welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. It's Friday, July 7th, National Dive Bar Day and World Chocolate Day. Coming up this hour, more media cheerleading for a recession. We talked to Mark Jacob about his new column for CourierNewsroom.com, Facts or Feelings, Inside the Media's Misleading Economic Coverage. There's so much good out there, good data, more fresh data just yesterday proving it, and yet outlets can't seem to stop bending over backwards to both sides the story about a healthy economy. So we'll talk to Mark Jacob about that. We're scheduled to talk to Dan Schumacher as well from up in Ashland. You might have missed our last hour where we talked about the imaginary case before the U.S. Supreme Court that led to LGBTQ discrimination being made legal. You can catch that show and all of our past shows anytime by just subscribing as a podcast, Apple, Spotify, over at the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. We'd love to have you be one of our subscribers, downloaders. We'd also like to have you be one of our callers. The studio line is 844-967-2789. You can email us, radio at upnorthnewswi.com. Would be nice to have you along. We've been giving updates on the various vetoes that Governor Tony Evers made to the Republicans' state budget bill before the governor then signed it, and it is now taking effect for the next 2 years here in Wisconsin. And we've been focusing on some of the big ones about how he adjusted the Republicans' plan for a big old tax giveaway to the very wealthy, and how he extended a basic level of, you know, school funding for the next 400 years. But there were some minor things in there as well, minor in comparison. For example, Evers reduced what the Republicans had put into the budget of a $10 million grant for the Republican National Convention, which will be in Milwaukee next year. It was a $10 million grant to the Greater Milwaukee Convention and Visitors Bureau, or Visit Milwaukee. And using the partial veto, he reduced that $10 million to $1 million. And then the remaining $9 million will just go back into the Department of Tourism for general marketing purposes. So this was all going to help the convention. It was basically going to be a state subsidy to the Republican Party that talks about hating state subsidies. And in his veto message, Evers said he opposed Republicans providing, quote, this level of funding when they did not fund other priorities like childcare and higher education. And if that sounds petty, yes, you could argue that it is. But that's the kind of thing that a governor can do, is to say, well, if you look at the whole scope of this, I'm not going to veto your whole budget. I'm not going to veto all of these things that are wrong with your priorities, but I'm going to send a message that you don't get this pet project and you don't get this earmark if this is the way that you're going to spend the taxpayers' dollars. And it's been proven over and over again that Republicans in this legislature don't have a problem wasting taxpayer dollars on things like private attorneys for lawsuits, or, hey, let's not forget the big one. That, of course, would be Foxconn. And Bruce Murphy over at Urban Milwaukee has a new story that talks about the ways that Foxconn is still wasting money this month, marking the sixth anniversary of the famous announcement by then Governor Scott Walker of a deal with Foxconn, a company out of Taiwan, that then President Donald Trump hailed as the eighth wonder of the world. Foxconn promised to invest $10 billion in a massive factory to manufacture high-resolution LCD screens. Murphy goes on to say that Foxconn had promised to employ 13,000 people, in return for which it would receive a $3 billion subsidy from you and me and every other taxpayer in the state. Murphy notes that 6 years later, Foxconn is still not manufacturing anything at the huge campus in Mount Pleasant and Racine County, but he does note that the total cost to state taxpayers to build this massive campus, the roads, utilities, everything else, so far the total is at least $683 million, with more costs likely to come. Now, thankfully for Wisconsin taxpayers, Governor Evers unseated Scott Walker in 2018 and immediately drastically downsized the state taxpayer commitment to be more in line with reality. He also showed the right way to do economic development is not through, you know, one massive commitment to a shady company, but instead to spread it around. For example, the Main Street Bounce Back grants $10,000 to 10,000 small businesses around the state. But as Murphy notes, you know, nothing has ever come as well of the Foxconn technology centers. They were promised for Green Bay and for downtown Eau Claire. Everybody was excited about one of the buildings there. And then the company was going to build a North American headquarters in Milwaukee. Again, not there. They were announced more than 5 years ago, still dormant. And Murphy notes in Urban Milwaukee, you might think these satellite centers would be part of the company's attempt at carving out a new direction, maybe a brighter future. But the three cities are not even mentioned on the Foxconn Wisconsin website nowadays. Let's take a break here. We will talk about the Brewers wrapping up their four-game series with the Cubs this week before heading into six very important games with the Cincinnati Reds. Three this weekend in Milwaukee, and then three more on the road after the upcoming All-Star break. We'll have that, the updated weatherology forecast, more headlines, and later Mark Jacob. That's coming up still ahead this Friday. You're up north.
I'm all right. Nobody but about me. Why you got to give me a fight?
Thought we'd do a little Caddyshack action before we talk about what Ron Johnson thinks of the takeover of the PGA by LIV Golf. And if you wonder if he's got a concern about human rights abuses or things like that, well, trust me, the senator is going to live down to your expectations. Jennifer Wojcicki joins us now from Weatherology to talk to us about a what started out as a very nice morning here in Wisconsin, but how things are going to look for the rest of this first full weekend. Well, not the first full weekend of July. That was on the first. Okay, this second full weekend of July. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, and it looks like a pretty decent weekend coming in ahead. We certainly could use the rain showers, but it doesn't look like too much overall here for the weekend. It looks like an increase in cloud cover today for western and central Wisconsin, Amory, Wausau, down to Richland Center. Then sunny for the rest. Mid-70s to around 80 degrees for everyone is going to be slightly below average for this time of the year. Then a chance for showers and storms by the evening hours from Oshkosh and the entire southern part of the state. A slight chance for showers for Saturday morning, Madison over to Milwaukee, then becoming most sunny. A slight chance for rain around Wausau and Wisconsin Rapids just during the day, then sunny for everyone else tomorrow. Highs still linger in that mid-70s to around about 80-degree mark. Sunday, sunny skies across the board. Highs warm into the low to mid-80s for most as a warm front begins to push through, lingering in the 70s, Oshkosh down to Waukesha and over to the lakefront. Then just a sneak peek at the new work week coming up by Monday. Warmer overall, mid-80s to right around about 90-degrees. Sunny for everyone to start out the day. Then a chance for rain and storms coming in the afternoon hours from a line extending from Milwaukee to Richland Center and for everyone north of that. Sunny throughout the day, though, around Madison and Waukesha with those shower chances coming in by the evening hours.
And so the showers, and again, because they're showers and not like some kind of an all day rain, is probably just going to grow the departure gap for, you know, what we need versus what we're getting so far this year.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, we certainly do need a lot, but it really just looks kind of scattered at this point.
It really does. Okay. Jennifer, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Me too.
Checking temperatures around the state right now. Amory coming in at 54 degrees. Wisconsin Rapids, 54. Rhinelander, 54 degrees. Fitchburg, 59. West Bend, 57. And up in Ashland, it's 56 degrees. Victor Caratini hit a tie-breaking home run in the eighth inning. And so the Brewers were able to recover from blowing a three-run lead and beat the Cubs on Thursday 6-5 to split that four-game series at American Family Field. Prior to Caratini's home run, Milwaukee had led 4-1 in the sixth. They'd led 5-3 in the eighth, but the Cubs' Yan Gomes hit a two-run dinger to tie things up. Thankfully, Caratini was around to clean up the damage. So Milwaukee's next six games, are against the Central Division leading Cincinnati Reds, three here at American Family Field starting tonight with Corbin Burnes on the mound. Then comes the All-Star break, and when we pick things up again next weekend, the Brewers will be in Cincinnati to, again, continue this division rivalry, catch those games in the Fox Valley on Oshkosh Air Support and in the Richland Center area from News from the Center, 107.7 and 1450 AM. Well, while we're still on the subject of sports, let's talk about the PGA Tour and the way that it has been taken over or is being taken over by essentially the government of Saudi Arabia. Now they're doing it through what's called a public investment fund, the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund. That's a very generic way of saying, you know, the blood money that they are trying to sports wash by buying soccer teams and now buying the PGA Tour and hoping to take attention away from their horrific human rights abuses and, you know, other things that they've been doing, you know, in that land where the 9/11 attackers, you know, were from. Is Ron Johnson concerned about this? Will he say much about it when there is a Senate hearing next Tuesday about LIV Golf, the Saudi series, taking over the PGA Tour? Well, according to an article posted this morning by Lawrence Andrea in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Ron Johnson does have a concern. His concern appears to be about the purity of the rules of golf. He's very concerned about the competition and what the golfers are doing rather than the concerns about human rights abuses. What Johnson said is he acknowledged that there are concerns. He said, you know, they're going to invest in global sports and you have to recognize and react to that reality. I think that's what the PGA in the end was faced with. You may not like that reality. I hated to see what happened with the split with the players at each other's throats. I think that was a poor choice of words on his part. And I'm hoping to play a constructive role in helping bridge that gap and repair the breach. And Lawrence goes on to write about the difference in the rules between the PGA Tour and LIV Golf. And LIV Golf is much less a competition as it is, you know, an exhibition. And there's some team play and you don't play as many holes. And Johnson said that he would like to see the competitive nature of the PGA Tour remain unchanged by the Saudi Arabian involvement. When Johnson talked about the competition in LIV compared to the PGA, he said, it's just not the same thing. And that's certainly what I want to make sure is preserved, is the purity of the competition rather than, you know, the whole thing of a hostile government, one that we have been reliant on for so long for energy and things like that. Johnson said that, yeah, there's a legitimate issue with antitrust concerns, but he believed that the courts would rule, quote, in favor of sports competition. In general, they've looked past those technical violations about antitrust and say that it's necessary for these sports leagues to cooperate, to collude, in order to maintain the type of competition that the public wants and I would see demands. Now, Johnson acknowledges the killing of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi and says that there's nothing the Saudis can do to wash that away. But again, Johnson comes back to the realities, as he likes to put it. There are certain realities you simply can't wash away. They may attempt to do it. I'm not sure how good their attempt will ever be, because as we're talking here, everybody is fully mindful of the, as I said, the Khashoggi assassination. But he then went on to say that the deal that was brokered was good for the game of golf, and that working with a country like Saudi Arabia and their $700 billion investment fund is simply a fact of life. Johnson said, should we be buying oil from Saudi Arabia? There are just certain realities in the world that you, whether you like it or not, have to accept. One of the realities is I'd rather, as a U.S. government, be dealing with Saudi Arabia rather than antagonizing them and have them go rushing into the arms of our adversaries like China or Russia. Which seems a little mixed up, given that we are very happy to antagonize China and then have them being allied with Russia in terms of, say, supporting the war in Ukraine. So it seems rather convenient to decide when we should be antagonistic with a country as opposed to holding a country accountable for things like, you know, state-sponsored murder and terrorism and things like that. But again, there will be this hearing on Tuesday. Senate Democrats called for it, and they are going to focus a lot on the Saudi government's involvement in an American major league sport. Johnson, meanwhile, says that he looks forward to the opportunity to describe the challenges in managing professional golf. And he says, you know, when you've got unlimited funds willing to get into any kind of business venture, it's not fair competition. It wasn't a fair fight between the PGA and Saudi Arabia. It simply wasn't. But he says, hopefully this hearing will give the PGA an opportunity to explain itself, whether the Saudis and the other side wants to take an opportunity to explain themselves. That would be up to them. But he said, from my standpoint, if I were chair of the committee, I would be concentrating on what we got wrong during the pandemic, said the guy who's been hostile to vaccines. I'd be concentrating on the fact that we're more than $32 trillion in debt, said the guy who added more than $2 trillion in debt with the 2017 tax cut. What is most surprising to me, and I'm going to give all the credit to Lawrence Andrea on this Journal Sentinel story that came out this morning that you should subscribe to and you should read. I'm going to give him the credit that nowhere in this story does it mention Hunter Biden. And the reason I say I'm giving him credit is, and if by any chance Lawrence is listening or wants to send me a message, I will bet a dollar that, you know, if you said, oh, did he go through this entire interview with Lawrence Andrea about LIV Golf and not mention Hunter Biden? I don't think that's even possible. So I give Lawrence all the credit in the world for not going off on some tangent saying, you know, Johnson, meanwhile, wants to know if Saudi Arabia had some kind of dealings with Hunter Biden. But I don't see Hunter Biden listed in here. I'm sure that Ron Johnson talked about it and that thankfully it's something that, you know, didn't make it into this version of the story. If I go back for a moment here to the vetoes that Governor Evers made in the state budget bill, and where we decide our money goes and doesn't go, I wanted to pick up on one comment from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss that he's mentioned before, and this is about lead pipes, lead water lines. We know the very real dangers, the very real impact it has on children. And if you were a legislator, and you know, I'm talking to every one of you, I believe every one of you would say that if a state government has the ability, it would be in our public interest to get those lead lines the hell out of here and replace them with other piping that is not a hazard to the health of our children. And yet, Robin Voss and legislative Republicans continue to be openly hostile to the notion of getting this done. And even again this week, Speaker Voss talked about how replacing lead pipes should be the responsibility of the owner. And if you know anything about renting, and Robin Voss and legislative Republicans know a lot about renting, there are a lot of landlords in that caucus over the years, they should know that it is not as easy as it sounds for the owner of a building to say, oh, those lead pipes that were put in 100 years ago, by the city, I'll just go ahead and do that. I'll just get a jackhammer out. It doesn't work that way. The water service line goes from the street past the curb line, which is where the city's responsibility ends and the private property owner begins. That's all one line. You can't just replace half of a water line. I'm looking at a tweet here from Michael Bradley of Milwaukee. He's got a great illustration of this, that you can't replace one side without disturbing the other half of the line that belongs to the city. So, of course, the city and the state have a role to play. You can't just say it's the private property owner's total responsibility. It's foolish. And Robin Voss continues to be foolish in turning away from the health of our children and getting the rest of these lead lines replaced. Mark Jacob is going to join us next, and we'll continue our conversation about media coverage of the economy. You're up.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com. You can't.
I think it's something that we need to keep in mind for the economy. Are you going to believe me or your lying eyes or some twist on it, which is what right-wing media seems to be doing with reporting on the economy? Well, hell, mainstream economy, too. And that's what Mark Jacob is here to talk about, as we do on Fridays, about how the national media is getting it right or getting it wrong. And today we're going to start by focusing on economic coverage. Mark, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. Hope you had a good holiday week here. And on this short week, you have a new column for Courier Newsroom called Facts or Feelings, Inside the Media's Misleading Economic Coverage. And I know we've talked a bit about this in the past, but you've done this full column on it, that I guess one of the ways I've described it is that it takes work to go through economic data. It doesn't take as much work to go through polling numbers and say how people feel, but that's not the service of journalism, is it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think there's wrong with doing polls, but when you make the polls more important than the economic statistics, you know, you're really making a mistake. And that's it. That's the whole facts, you know, facts versus feelings argument, is that, you know, that I'm making here is that if you don't, economic facts are difficult to figure out, and, you know, trends work in different ways. And, you know, everyone's confounded by the economy right now. You know, they've been predicting a recession for, you know, a year and a half or two, and it hasn't happened. And I, frankly, you know, in a normal world, you'd give Biden credit for that. But Republicans just keep on talking about, you know, it's going to be a recession. It's going to be a recession. The economy's terrible. The economy's terrible. And if you keep on telling people the economy's terrible, some people are going to think the economy's terrible, even though we have, you know, a really low jobless rate. Almost everyone who wants a job has one. And that's just fantastic. And the inflation has been too high. That's a kind of a natural result of pumping a bunch of money into the system to help people during the pandemic, when a lot of people were out of work. And but this has been managed pretty well now, to where inflation is coming down. There's something Pat called the misery index, which is the where you combine the jobless rate and the inflation rate, and the lower the misery index is, the better off the economy is for people. And the misery index now is at a very normal, like what the kind of the average it's been for the, you know, for recent decades. In fact, it's lower now than it was when Obama got reelected, when George W. Bush got reelected. I mean, it's in a really good place. And so to make this look like some Biden economic disaster, you've got to totally go against the facts. You have to make it totally, well, I feel like the economy is bad, instead of, like, you know, I can point to numbers that say the economy is bad, because the economy is not bad.
It's much like the figures on crime. You know, crime is down in many ways in many places, and several Marquette polls have people saying, I feel safe in my daily life. But if you ask them how bad is crime overall, and they say, oh, it's terrible, because, I mean, everything that right-wing media, you know, blows up and magnifies feeds into that narrative. But again, if you're looking at just the data, private sector jobs, you know, the latest report had them jumping by almost 500,000 when analysts were expecting maybe 200,000 jobs, and annual pay is, you know, rising at a 6.5% rate. And there's, you know, no shortage of other indicators that are out there. I think, Mark, that part of it is to continue our conversation from last week, that the president has decided to embrace the moniker of Bidenomics.
Right.
And that Republicans and right-wing media have decided, all right, fine, then we're going to try to make Bidenomics a pejorative rather mm-hmm. than something that you want to brag about. So I think lacking any other big policy changes, and of course we're not going to see that in Congress, I think that for the next, you know, 12, 16 months here, it's going to be a fight about, is Bidenomics good or is Bidenomics bad?
Right, right. And it's going to be the real problem that my column in Courier Newsroom was about, was that it seems like a lot of the media, especially cable news, is emphasizing the polls more than the facts, you know? And so you tell people it's bad, they're going to like say it's bad. It's this feedback loop in which people think that. Also, another tricky thing here is that some of the things that are most obvious to people have been the worst as far as inflation, like gas prices. And you don't hear Republicans talking about price gouging in the oil industry. And the fact is, and this is a fact, not a feeling, the profits of major oil companies doubled last year, doubled. And this was clearly price gouging by the oil companies, but you didn't hear that from the Republicans. They were blaming it on Biden instead of the true culprit. So everything's going to get twisted. And it would really be nice if the news media would just kind of talk about what's actually happening instead of how people are feeling about it when they're fed a bunch of disinformation.
Well, we understand why politicians would behave this way, right. But when newsrooms do, I think the question that I led off the show with to ask you about is, what's the motivation there? Is it a craving of conflict? Is it a reporting laziness, or is it such an accommodation, both sides in economic data, because if you talk only about the fact that it's positive, you risk looking one-sided, right, even though you're reporting the facts.
Well, it's all of those things, Pat. And I think the interesting thing is when you see the Washington Post, New York Times talk about the economy, it's never positive news. It's always, well, inflation is down, but that might be bad for, you know, it's always, there's always this kind of, but that might be bad for kind of follow on any good economic news. And I think that these big news outlets think that makes them look smarter and savvier and more sophisticated. Plus, you have the problem of, you got that poll there, and that poll is just a raw number, and it's right there, and you know, you can just quote it. While economic data, there's a lot of different economic data, and sometimes it's going in opposite directions. And truth is, people really are scratching their heads about what's going on here. There've been a lot of predictions that have been just flat wrong, predicting a recession, for example. And people are still writing headlines saying, well, the coming recession. Who says there's a coming recession? They've been saying that for years now, and it hasn't happened.
It's as if national media wants to be able to say, well, we just don't take what we're spoon-fed, meaning right, the latest economic data, and yet they take these negative numbers or these negative, you know, talking points, right, essentially as if they're being spoon-fed to both sides what the data is. And so I hope that folks get out of this, you know, that take a close look at the outlet that's reporting the news and, you know, really pay attention to the data of the actual numbers. Again, facts versus feelings, and you'll find it right there at couriernewsroom.com. I want to ask about a couple of other stories in the news, but before I do, I was just remembering that when Don Rue gave the liner just now and said to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and I'm like, wait, I'm going to have to change that liner. It's going to have to say, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Threads, or maybe just skip Twitter entirely and just say Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Have you been part of the, I guess it's now well over 10 million people who quickly looked at Twitter and said, see ya, and headed over to Threads? Or what are you seeing and thinking about that?
Well, I'm not on Threads yet, but I may be. Who knows? I'm on Instagram, and that's associated with Threads, so it probably wouldn't be hard. I got to tell you, I mean, this is an amazing business story that somebody would spend $44 billion to destroy a company. And I don't know. I mean, Elon Musk, everyone says he's a genius. Is this genius behavior? It seems just a self-destructive, crazy behavior, in my opinion. I'm on Twitter now. I'm not on Threads yet. I may be. Who knows? And the reason I haven't fled Twitter is I don't want to like cede the battlefield to the liars and and crazy people. So I'm, you know, fighting back. But there comes a time when, you know, when Elon Musk, you know, supports, you know, lets Nazis, you know, be Nazis on Twitter. And do you really want to be part of that? And so, you know, I don't know how it's going to go, but I got to tell you, I tweeted the other day. I said, Elon Musk has done everything to make Twitter fail except rename it to MySpace. I mean, that it's just that all these moves have made no sense business wise. And why, you know, why he did it? I don't know. But there are some conspiracy theories that he wants to eliminate independent voices. And the truth of it, Pat, is that big outlets like Twitter do give regular people a chance to break through with good messaging and get through, you know, they don't have to go through CBS, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. They don't have to do that. They can post something, and if it's good and interesting, it can get an audience. And there are a lot of people in power who don't like that.
You're absolutely right. There are people that I never would have seen otherwise. And I see their takes on Twitter over the years, and I'm just, you know, kind of blown away, or just impressed enough that I follow them. And at some point, some people, you know, it turns out that was a shot in the dark. They don't have much more to add to the conversation, and then fine, you stop following them. But it is the democratization of social media, right? The positive aspect of that. It can't be denied. But the impression you definitely got from Threads the first couple of days, as I put it, was less meanness, fewer Nazis. And right. You go back to Twitter now, and again, I don't know if the algorithm has been tweaked or what it is, but I mean, we always talk about, like, you know, sports Twitter or entertainment Twitter or black Twitter. Right now, my Twitter feed looks like Republican Twitter. It says, you know, fewer people are tweeting, and what I am seeing are things that, I mean, it's reading more like a Fox News version. And I get your point about not seeding the ground, but it definitely feels, after just a couple of days, it feels like there's a real mass migration going on here, the likes of which didn't happen with Post or Mastodon. I think people found it too clunky or whatnot. And Threads is just like, hey, we're Twitter, just with fewer Nazis. And people are going, all right.
And you know what? Something that's hilarious is that Elon Musk is threatening to sue because all the employees that Twitter fired are working on Threads now. So, you know, I fired those people, but you can't hire them. It's every move is just more laughable and idiotic.
I said in the early days of the Trump administration, so, and I said this earnestly, is he a plant from Russia just to make us look bad at how to do so many things wrong? And you almost have to ask the same thing about Elon Musk. It's like, is he like the embodiment of the old troll farms that they had back in 2016? I don't know. I've got time for one more, and it's far from the most important, but I did mention just before you came on that I was impressed with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for doing a very long story about Ron Johnson. And nowhere in the story about LIV Golf and the PGA did we see the words Hunter Biden, which is weird for anything involving Ron Johnson. Right. But you noted that, and you really called out this editor in chief at the Federalist, who is taking that White House cocaine story and immediately starting a new rumor, or spreading a new rumor. And you nailed it about, I mean, it's just low life scum.
Yeah, it's and the real creepy thing about it is the way that Molly Hemingway wrote it. She said, surprising number of my friends are hypothesizing that the cocaine is not Hunter's or Joe's, but Jill's. I'm intrigued by how strongly some of my friends think this. I just don't see it. Give me a break. So why did you post it? Right. You know, the funny thing was, I just got a comment from, you know, kind of a hero of mine, Michael McKean, who was in Spinal Tap, the actor.
Yes.
He commented on my post, you know, because I pretty much called her low life, no class scum, which I think is accurate. Michael McKean said I was being too nice. You know?
Yes.
I mean, how low can you go? I mean, just make up something for no reason. You know it's not true. It's just disinformation. I mean, the thing about it, Pat, is that the scariest thing about what's going on now is that the Republican Party and the right wing have decided that lying is a tactic. Mm-hmm. That if you're not lying, you're not trying, and that is, I put it, way I put it before, is that saying that that's a sacrament of the Republican Party. That you have to lie. If you don't lie, it looks like you're not really trying very hard.
You're not lying. You're not trying. I like that. Mark Jacob, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. Have a wonderful weekend.
Talk to you later.
All right. When we come back, we will have Dan Schumacher along from Ashland, and we'll talk a little sports as we head into the weekend. Again, you can read up on what we're doing. You can catch up with what I'm doing on Twitter by searching for Pat Quitelow, or on Facebook, Pat Quitelow Up North. And again, all of our social media for Up North News, just look for Up North News WI. We'll be back here up north.
Red and white, blue suede shoes.
What do we got here, Dan Schumacher? U.S. Blues?
U.S. Blues, man. Jerry singing the blues to the U.S. government.
Okay.
Perfect for your show.
Yeah, it is. There's days it really feels like. Dan Schumacher's here. Now the director of athletics for, what is it, Northland College?
Come on, Pat. Yeah, Northland College. Yes.
Okay.
In beautiful Ashland, Wisconsin, where yesterday Lake Superior was like glass. It was amazing to see, because usually I've never really seen it like glass. Mm-hmm. There's always waves or something, you know, wind or. But it was gorgeous yesterday up in Ashland, 80 degrees, you know, 75 degrees and sunny. It was great.
And you had a golf outing.
We did. We had our university golf outing that benefits the athletic department. So we had what, 28 foursomes. So a good turnout. A lot of great prizes were given out. In fact, our mutual friend Tim Crawford's brother, Dan Crawford, who's the retired police chief from Ashland, he won a big screen TV yesterday in the raffle. So
it was so, nice. So if you know where he lives, you know who's throwing the Super Bowl party this year.
Exactly.
So, well,
exactly.
Good for you. Hey, I want to come to the Cubs Brewer series in just a minute here. But yeah. Now I'm actually going to give away a little radio show secret. Christina Laurie is on with me every Tuesday morning. We talk about some of the feature stories that she's working on for Up North News. And I want to tell you that we already recorded next Tuesdays because of the way our schedules work. And in it, we got to talking about it'll be the All-Star break. We get to talking about, you know, food at stadiums and, you know, what stadiums are the most highly rated. And I could have waited till next Friday, but I'm going to go ahead, and because Christine and I are going to talk about, you know, what we like in stadiums and what we don't. And she's a White Sox fan, being from the Chicago suburbs herself. And there is no love whatsoever for whatever used to be called Comiskey Park or what. It's got some god-awful bank or
guarantee rate stadium or something.
Something. Whereas she knows,
before
she
that knows, it was Cellular One. And then it was Comiskey, so it's weird.
So have you been there? I think she called it the last bad ballpark that was built, you know, during that phase before ballparks really got good with their construction.
You know,
I just pass it down the freeway.
Been in worse ballparks.
Have been in two. It's called Wrigley Field. They talk all about how Wrigley and Fenway are at the top of this list of ballpark attractions. Well, for no other reason that they both date back to 1912. If they didn't have, you know, a major league sports team in there,
yeah,
you'd call it a dump, you know.
Yeah, it. I mean, it doesn't have the amenities that you know. I was just talking with somebody yesterday because we were watching. It was a day game, the Cubs Brewers, right. Mm-hmm. And in the clubhouse there, and I talked about how nice a ballpark Milwaukee plays in.
Yes.
And I mean, it's gorgeous, and the food is excellent. The service, the concourses are wide. The bathrooms are modern. You know, you go to Wrigley, you know, you're still basically going to the bathroom and you know, for a man
in a trench.
In a trench, yeah, like a trench, like yeah. A horse trench or yes. Horse thing, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, it just has an aside. The thing about Wrigley.
Here comes the romance. Here we go.
It's just around the park. It isn't so much the park.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually like a Grateful Dead concert.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The music. You want to be inside, but I'll tell you what, there's a bigger party going outside the concert.
Yes.
You know, yeah. And so that's what makes it special, you know, going to restaurants and bars and the whole nightlife of mm-hmm. Lincoln Park, Wrigleyville area. So that's the reason for the nostalgia. Whereas, I'm not kidding you, you go to Comiskey Park, you drive in and you drive out.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, you're right there on the freeway, and there ain't nothing. around there whatsoever. It kind of reminded me of the Metrodome. The Metrodome in Minneapolis never lived up to its potential, not just because of the marshmallow shape and everything else, but the neighborhood around it, never. There was like the one bar there, Hubert's, and that was it. You know, whereas now Target Field has some nice little, you know, small bars and other things, and you're right there in other stadiums. I've been to a few. I've been to Wrigley. I've been to Fenway. There's plenty more that I'd like to go to just to see if they too have, it's not just what's inside the stadium, but what's outside of it as well. So apart from the ones we've mentioned already, do you have a favorite? It doesn't have to be baseball. It could be football or college. Well, especially college, because you're trying to build a program there. When you think of college, what do you like for stadiums?
Michigan Stadium.
The big house.
The big house. I mean, there's nothing like, I've sat in the nosebleed seats. I've sat in the luxury suite. I've been on the sideline for games. So there's nothing like the energy of a Michigan football game, especially when they play Notre Dame. And it's a little something extra. I don't know why, but I've gone to a ton of Michigan Notre Dame games over my lifetime. And the energy in that stadium, I mean, 105,000 people. I have not been to Buckeye Stadium, which is supposed to be just as incredible of energy. You know, I haven't been to Alabama either, but I've been to Arizona State. I've been to Berkeley and Cal,
and I've been to Camp Randall a couple of times.
Yeah,
and too. I have to say, I know they've tested the stadium, but I'm going to admit I still get nervous during the jump around. I mean, I love the energy. I think it's awesome. But I'd be lying if I didn't say you just look and go, you know, kind of like that video this week of that roller coaster that had a big crack in the beam as the coaster was going over. It's like, okay, I don't want to be the one that discovers a crack at Camp Randall, you know, right before the fourth quarter. I better, before we run out of time, get back to the Cubs Brewers. Those were, you know, they split the series. So from an outsider's perspective, it was a good series. And I think from the standpoint of both teams, you're happy to walk away with a split, because those were four pretty exciting games.
Actually, weren't they all one run games?
I believe so, or close to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was homers, and Yelich broke out yesterday in a big way. I thought the pitching was okay. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed the baseball part, everything from small ball to the big ball, in all four games. And it was a great series to watch if you're a baseball fan.
You know, you talk about the pitching, and I don't know why I'm so cognizant of it now, but I just have this thing where I insist every starter needs to go at least six full, you know, and have a quality start. In part because I'm part of that last generation that, you know, there were very few relief pitchers, and the amount of complete games was insane. Yeah. And now it's like, well, it's been 5 1/3. That's it. You know, we got to get them out of there. And
it's all about pitch count. It's about pitch count.
Yeah.
And these, the doctors and the trainers, they use the analytics with it on his velocity. They use velocity and all these different measurements to say, you know, Joe, the manager, you know, he can only pitch 115 pitches.
Yeah.
And no matter what goes on, we got to get him out of there. So, I mean,
which is fine if you've got that middle reliever and if you've got that closer, but especially a team like the Brewers, where, I mean, they're bringing in people from the minors left and right because of injuries or failure to perform or whatnot, that I just miss complete games. I would love to see more of them, or at least more starting pitchers going to the sixth or seventh.
But Pat, everything's gone to specialization now.
I understand, but I get to vent with you, because we're going to sit in the rocking chair side by side at the retirement home one of these days.
Right.
Hopefully not too soon. Have a good weekend, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Take care now.
Dan Schumacher there, everybody. You can follow me online, Pat Kreitlow Up North, or Pat Kreitlow on Twitter. On Monday, we'll do Motherhood Monday with folks from Motherhood for Good. Have a wonderful weekend. See you back here 6 a.m. Monday.